Blog Talk Radio.
Sun's on my back, winds in my ears.
Hello and welcome to Those Darn Guys Who Happen to Be Therapists. I'm psychologist Dr. Jim Weaver, along with psychotherapist Hughes Kraft and couples therapist Dr. David Sanford, and we'll be boldly going out into the potosphere once again where no therapists have gone before. Failing that, hopefully putting the fun back in dysfunctional and bringing some insights into the issues of life, love, and the search for a decent relationship. And we will be joined once again toward the end of the show by Dr. Mark Kiefner, psychologist and clinical director of Bayside Neurorehabilitation Services, and he will have, once again, some cutting-edge brain research, which he calls A Minute on the Mind, so we will be looking forward to that. The topic today is emptiness and boredom, a very heavy topic for what is a very light and beautiful day here, but I'm with my light and beautiful colleagues, the Darn Guys. Good morning, David. Good morning, Hughes.
Good morning to you, Jim.
Good morning to you, Jim.
A light and beautiful day here.
Yes.
Yes.
So what about this topic? Emptiness and boredom in relationships. What do you think?
I think that this is not a concern of people at the beginning of their relationship. I mean, if they have a sense of emptiness and boredom with each other at the beginning, they're going to cut it off right then and there.
Exactly.
So most people, I think, who stay together find each other not at all boring, quite interesting, quite exciting at the beginning, and particularly during the period that we can call falling in love. It's the period after that that you can call standing in love where emptiness and boredom, I think, enters in.
Mm-hmm.
I just think one other word I'd like to add to your list there, David, is mysterious. You know, that other person that we are falling in love with, there's a lot of mysteriousness over there, which I think kind of gets worn down over time as well. But, you know, let's come back to the standing in love and how it kind of wears down, huh?
Yeah, lots to discover at the beginning.
Yeah,
lots to discover.
And true mystery is the opposite of boredom. That's something that interests you, excites you, you're curious about it, you've got energy to find out about it. The exact opposite of emptiness and boredom. Somebody's breathing into their mic. Don't do that. So how do you get there, you guys?
How do you get to empty and boring?
How do you get from excited, full of mystery and energy, to bored and empty?
Well, I think one almost sure way of getting there is if you don't realize, either from the beginning of the relationship or from near the beginning of the relationship, that it's a relationship that you have to deliberately cultivate.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that sort of came to you as a gift from the gods in the beginning, all this interest and excitement and good sex and discovery and everything else, all that stuff that you get at the beginning of the relationship is not going to continue, almost certainly, unless it is deliberately cultivated. If it's deliberately cultivated, then I don't see that a couple needs to descend into a pretty much regular state of boredom and disinterest
right.
each other.
Yeah. I think there's this assumption that relationships should take care of themselves and that you don't have to work at them. And I think nothing could be further from the truth. I like your phrase, standing in love. And I wonder if relationships are a little bit like sharks. You know, if you're not moving forward, you're going to die.
Like sharks?
You know, sharks have to move forward or they die. Right. So you got to be kind of on the lookout for stagnation, on the lookout for things that are building up. And I think sometimes I look at the stagnation, the boredom, the emptiness as sludge that builds up in a relationship. A lot of time it happens because people are sitting on their vitality or sitting on their resentments. Those resentments build up, and rather than saying, okay, this is something that I'm looking forward to, happy about, going to get something from this person and this relationship, you're thinking, I'm getting things that make me frustrated, that make me mad, that make me hurt, that make me feel bad, and then you drop back rather than going forward and say, okay, I need to do something positive about this relationship, or I need to deal with this issue that's bothering me. You become passive, and when you have a passive relationship to something, it can very quickly get boring.
Can you stay with that just a little bit? I mean, rather than move on to something else, can we talk for a sort of flesh out that idea that a contribution to emptiness and boredom is when you're feeling resentment and when you're feeling anger and you just sort of let it sit there? Well, I mean, what, for example, could you do in a situation like that which would take you pretty far away from a kind of empty and bored state?
Right, right. Yeah, I think, the opposite of emptiness and boredom is taking risks. And taking risks makes things exciting again. Risks mean that you're putting something on the line. You know, you want to say something to your partner. You don't know how they're going to take it. You don't know what their reaction is going to be. You don't know whether they're going to get a good response or a bad response. It's sometimes hard to put what you're feeling out there into words to make it real, because then you have to deal with it, and you're not sure you're ready to or equipped to deal with it. So I think those are, in general, the kind of approaches to go for.
Go ahead, Hughes.
I was just thinking of that old comment, familiarity breeds contempt. You know, just to run the risk of being boring as well as to be bored, and to challenge the relationship a little bit, but also to challenge ourselves, too, to really kind of look at our day-to-day way we kind of present ourselves. You guys still there?
Yeah.
I just got a little...
We're listening with rapt attention.
Can't hear that rapt attention?
No, I heard a little bubble, so I thought I got disconnected here. But anyway, I'm here.
So
familiarity, just kind of it just getting stale because it's too familiar. My partner presents as familiar all the time. I present myself as just kind of familiar. The habits, just the same stuff over and over again, I think can lead to that sense of contempt or just I'm bored with the other person, I'm bored with myself. And I think risk is a good word. Take risk with doing something different for ourselves, but also doing something risky by, bringing it into the relationship to talk about it.
So if you were to take that as what you've just said as a kind of guideline, then somebody listening who thinks, well, I don't want my relationship to descend into emptiness and boredom, then a guideline could be, from the beginning, you've got to, you should see that to keep the relationship lively, you need periodically to challenge yourself. You need to take some personal risks yourself.
Right.
Could we say that's a guideline?
Sure.
So somebody's wondering right now, well, what sort of personal risks? Well, we've got the one already that we've said, where a personal risk is taking a chance to share your anger or your resentment or your dissatisfaction with something.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right?
And that's a personal risk, presumably. Why?
Well, I've talked about that a little bit ago. You know, you don't know what the reaction is going to be.
Yeah.
And you put yourself out there for the other person's response. You have to be careful because, you know, it depends on how you put it out there. It can be, you know, more volatile or less volatile when you bring something up. What's his name? John Gottman, who's done a lot of research on couples, talks about a soft startup that, you know, if you just blurt something out or make it angry or negative or accusing, you know, then you're getting into that realm. If you bring it up in terms of, I want to do something constructive, something, you know, to bring us closer, something that's been, you know, bugging me and getting in the way of my feeling as close to you as I want to get, that's a more of a slow startup. You know, the other thing is making it real. Sometimes you think, oh, man, I'm not feeling as close to or as in love with my spouse as I was in the past. Don't want to make that kind of real. You want to say, oh, well, that's, you know, not all that much of a problem. That'll go away, et cetera.
What you're talking about is a collaborative thing, hopefully, right?
Oh, exactly. I think, you know, all discussions with couples, it's important to be collaborative, you know, and try to get to win-win situations. It's not about me getting my needs met or you getting your needs met. It's about both of us getting our needs met. Sometimes that's, you know, that causes a conflict, and you have to be creative about finding a way for both of us to be happy or satisfied. Chronically not getting that done, somebody's going to get unhappy. And one of the reactions to getting unhappy is being mad, and the opposite one of that is to get bored and empty.
Apathetic, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah. In the collaborative sense, you need a kind of agreement in the relationship that for the health of the relationship, both of us have a right and will be supported for being outspoken and speaking our own truth to each other, or is that going too far? Is that going too far, do you think?
I don't think it's going too far. It sounds like it can be an agreement, but, you know, just a verbalized reminder every once in a while to say, hey, that's a healthy side of our relationship, so let's agree to that being a healthy component of our relationship.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going too far.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Hey guys, we've got some people on the chat, and we've got some people listening in. So if you've called in and listening in, and you want to ask a question or make a comment, press 1 on your computer or your phone, and that'll let me know that you want to join us on the air. So go ahead, guys. Sorry to interrupt.
I'd like to get back to emptiness and boredom for a minute. I'd like to actually put a plug in for emptiness and boredom. I mean, we're kind of talking prevention here, and yeah,
there's taking a risk.
Taking a risk.
Okay.
Well,
emptiness and boredom. Go for it.
All right. Well, I think there may be a little bit of a built-in assumption here that if we get to a place of emptiness and boredom in the relationship, that underneath of that may be some contempt and anger that left undiscussed could really be damaging for the relationship. Emptiness and boredom can also be a signal that the relationship needs something,
mm-hmm.
and maybe we need to make a change, or there is something to talk about, versus it being maybe a situation that I don't know what to do with, oh my gosh, and keep it internally and just kind of let it kind of do this long, slow piece of, you know, toxic deterioration, contempt piece. But to really be aware of the emptiness and the boredom and use it as a moment for action, either verbally or physically, to get something going in the relationship, because it's an indicator. I mean, I think all relationships have a little bit of that every once in a while. It's what you do with it that's important.
Right. Yeah.
So how do I do? I put a plug in there,
Yeah.
I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing. That's all I'm angling here.
Right. You mean it's good in the sense that it can galvanize you to an essential kind of action, right?
Yeah, to be mindful of it and what's attained, and to take action around it.
Right.
Okay, so let's say that my view. Let's say that we're in a counseling session, and I'm the husband in this one, and at this point I protest and I say, look, I didn't get married for all this excitement all the time and all this turmoil. I mean, your home is supposed to be the place where you're safe and where you feel comfortable. And you know, I have a very hard job, and I like to come home at night, and I like to feel that it's peaceful. And I like the habits that we've got. I like my wife just the way she is, and I don't want to stretch a lot. I mean, I do that at work. Good grief.
Right.
What do you say to him?
Well, I think it's back to what I was saying earlier in terms of a win-win situation. That's something that you would like and is important to you. And let's see if we can give you some of that and give your spouse, who's asking for more, some of what she needs. So now you have to put your heads together and be creative, and come up with something. You say to the husband that comes home and has that attitude, you love your wife, you want her to be happy, you want her to have the things that she needs, and you also love yourself, and you want some of the things that you need. And one of the things about being in a relationship is that, you have to make some compromises. So how are we gonna get to somewhere where both of you can be satisfied? May seem in the beginning that there's no solution to this, that it's opposites. But that's, I would suggest that that's because you're not thinking creatively enough.
Okay, you don't see it as an either or then. There's no reason why a healthy relationship can't be both challenging and risk-taking, and also sort of safe and comfortable.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
And
it could be both?
Sure. And, I mean, sometimes, some of the excitement and craziness is not productive. It's not getting to a place where it's a relationship. It's about somebody, having so much built-up energy and emotion that they're trying to desperately to find some way to get it out or to get it resolved. But it would be a lot better if you can find productive ways to get that resolved rather than kind of repetitive ways to kind of keep upsetting the apple cart. Upsetting the apple cart is exciting maybe the first time and maybe the second time, but if we're not finding a way to make it exciting without turning over the whole apple cart every time, then...
There are people who are conflict junkies, right?
Exactly.
Conflict junkies, in the sense that they got to have excitement. They got to have the rush of, going a few rounds together in the ring feel alive, right?
Right, right. Yeah, and I guess that would have to be addressed. You'd have to talk about, what's the point of the conflict? What do you eventually want to get to? And I think you can get deeper underneath that in terms of some kind of psychological need there.
Yeah. Okay.
So how do we get some mysterious back in relationship then?
What is this?
How do we get some mysteriousness back into relationships? I just kind of throw the question out there around how can we build some of that, that mysteriousness, that interest, that love back into the relationship. I think part of this emptiness and boredom is looking in within oneself to kind of address, geez, am I empty and bored in my own life outside of the relationship? What can I do to kind of make my life, or what have I let go in the way of habits, I mean hobbies or interests, that maybe I could reconnect to create a little, create myself as more interesting to bring back into the relationship.
I think that's a really excellent point. And there's an assumption that many of us have that about the other person in the relationship, that it's up to you to make me happy. And
right.
if I'm bored, then it's up to you to bring some excitement into my life. And why can't you ever talk about things that are interesting?
Mm-hmm.
And, because it's so easy to scapegoat each other because we're kind of right there. Always
yeah.
present as the object of our scapegoating or projection. So to build a healthy relationship that has some variety and excitement in it, you've got to somehow have that in your own life. You've got to be able to bring that from your own separate existence into the relationship, and it just isn't fair to put up with your own personal boring life and hope all the excitement, all the good juice in the relationship is going to come from your partner.
But I think one thing we should, exactly. Yeah, I was just saying, I think one of the things we might just mention on a more clinical side is, you know, sometimes there can be, you know, undiagnosed or unacknowledged depression in one partner or the other. And that may be worth taking a look at taking seriously.
Indeed.
So it may not have to do with the relationship. It may have to do with, like you guys were saying before, you know, something in terms of you not putting enough energy into your own life and excitement and so forth. And also it may be, you know, something clinical that you need to take seriously and take a look at. Hey guys, let's go to our pal Dr. Mark Kiefner for a minute on the mind with Dr. Mark Kiefner. Hello, Mark.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great.
You're coming through great, Mark.
All right, great. It's been fascinating listening to you guys today. And,
as opposed to other days?
Was it not boring for you? Has this been boring listening or not boring?
No, I was at the risk of... Never mind, I was going to say something really stupid. it's always great listening to you guys. But I'm going to be very careful about what I say in the future when I open up here. I don't want to be stabbed like that again. The thing I'm thinking about, as you guys are talking today, is Helen Fisher, the anthropologist, who talks about, you know, how human brains have three systems. One, our sort of lust system that makes us go look for somebody. Two, our romance system that makes us latch on to someone and kind of idealize them. And then three, our actual attachment system, so that we actually can tolerate the person that we've attached ourselves to over the long term. And and part of that, I think, is that once we're in that attachment mode, the different people, I think, have different degrees of novelty seeking or need for novelty in their lives. And there's some very interesting research about how dopamine and various white matter fiber tracts can predict your need for novelty seeking. But in relationship, it seems to me that part of the thing that we don't talk about much is intention, and how do we take the intent or the need for novelty and create that in the relationship. And it seems to me that that's kind of what you guys were talking about, is how do we take a relationship where the novelty has faded and restore some novelty to the relationship so that the relationship is exciting again.
Getting at, I mean, if we had lots of time for this, you're sort of bridging, or could be bridging, to an equally interesting topic, which is, what do you do For example, when the need for novelty is strong in one partner, but not particularly strong in the other, you know, is it simply a matter of compromise? Or certainly you've got to legitimize that difference. It isn't like one person's way is dysfunctional and the other person's way isn't. I mean, you're talking about legitimate differences between people, right?
Yeah, people legitimately have different degrees of novelty seeking. And and so what might be a very comfortable, like the situation you were saying, I've got a tough job and I want to come home and I want a peaceful life, and you know, you've got maybe a partner who's more of a need for excitement, a little more drama, a little more tension, a little more get up and go. And, you know, there's always that need to kind of figure out how do I make this work for both of us, or how do we make this work for both of us. And I guess that's the dilemma in relationship, is the constant sort of a seesaw between the me and the we.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you said we could actually test for this. We could, if we have a potential partner, we could get them to have a test and see just how much excitement do they need.
You know, if our agents can't figure that out, we're in serious trouble, guys.
I was speaking for our listeners, you know, saying might be something you want to look into.
You know, there are, I know, some tests, and I actually don't know the names of the tests, but I know there are some tests that are used to assess novelty seeking. But probably you could probably figure that out if you're a listener here. You can probably figure that out just from the person's hobbies. Am I a book reader, or am I a television watcher, or am I do I have to go base jumping to get my thrill? Do I have to fly a hang glider, or am I watching it on television?
Right. Yeah. And also you can see what the person has, one of those fancy motorcycles. You know,
the person is a motorcyclist. They probably have some novelty-seeking dimension to their personality that their partner's going to have to endure.
Right.
Like me.
Yeah, like you, yes. People have to endure. Okay, listen, guys, we're once again almost out of time, and once again, we've just barely touched the surface on some of these things. Exciting discussion. I thought we had some really good things today. So we will look forward to be back together next week with another topic. And anything anybody wants to say before we end? No.
I never meant to say that you guys were boring at the beginning. I never meant to say that. I was wrong of you.
That was wrong of you, yes. Yes, Mark.
I want to apologize. I want to apologize and restart our relationship.
Yeah, really. And I want to say your contribution this week was really scintillating this week.
I'll see what I can do.
I find you. Okay.
What? What? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say to Mark, I find your contributions always interesting.
Thank you, David.
You know, sometimes I wish we had a little bit. You know, I always see more possibilities than what we're talking about. It makes me want to just keep the thing rolling longer, you know.
Yeah, I always find the same thing with you guys. It's always kind of fascinating. So.
Super. Then we'll keep coming back for a minute. Okay, bye.
See ya.
Guys, bye-bye.
Yeah, good.
Hey.
Okay, everybody.
Take me away.
Bye-bye.
Make it Joe Wilson. Take me away, my sweet, like the night you took me.
time.